Welcome to the PeaceWorks Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Moles. I'm a pastor and biblical counselor who helps churches and families confront the evil of domestic violence and promote healthy, God-honoring relationships.
Welcome back to the PeaceWorks Podcast. I'm Chris Moles, and I'm excited to jump back into our questions. We've been answering questions on the intersection of domestic abuse and biblical counseling. And today's question is, it's really dear to my heart, and it's going to sound weird, but as a biblical counseling nerd, somebody who's been in the movement for 26 years, I guess, this is one that's really sparked something in me. So here's the question. Pastor Chris, in my training, we learned the importance of extensive data gathering to understand a person's situation. When a husband and wife come to me and he says she's disrespectful and she says he's controlling, my instinct is to get, quote, both sides of the story. How does this data gathering process change when coercive control might be involved? Is it ever wise not to meet with them together? And how would I know? What a great question. For those of you who maybe, you know, you're listening along and you're intrigued by biblical counseling and the domestic abuse work that we do, but you're not a biblical counselor. You're not in the world. Maybe you're an LPC. Maybe you're a pastor who hasn't been trained in biblical counseling. Maybe you're a victim, survivor, or a perpetrator. Let me just share with you a couple things about our tribe. And one of those things is that, generally speaking, the vast majority of us who have been trained in biblical counseling have been trained at the church level or at the academic level, or both, which is the case for me. And most of the time at the church level, at a conference, at an event, at a training seminar, at a supper seminar, that's how old I am, most of us have been taught seven or eight, depending on who taught them, key elements of biblical counseling. One that's always present and really rarely changes, I've heard it only delivered two different ways, is gathering data or gathering relevant information. And it's a principle of biblical counseling that's designed to position us as learners. And so the question is really framed from a more old school terminology, which is data gathering. This is something you're going to hear about or read about if you read some of the early literature on biblical counseling. It's something that you're still going to hear pretty regularly in our circles if you're in what we call a track one type event or a foundational or basic training conference. And honestly, friends, it is a terminology that we use with beginners, but I think it's one of the most misunderstood and misapplied element that we learn early on in biblical counseling. And I'll tell you why. I think we know we're supposed to gather data. We know we're supposed to be learners. We know we should patiently ask questions and gather relevant information. But a lot of us, we're busy people, we often are overconfident, and we rush ahead. And I cannot tell you the number of cases that I've worked, that I've had to apologize for rushing ahead, or the number of cases we've consulted on that could have been so much more effective if the biblical counselor had slowed down, asked a few more questions, and gathered relevant data. So it's near and dear to my heart. A big shout out to Doc Smith, Bob Smith, who was the one who drilled this in my head many, many years ago. Doc is with the Lord now, and I'm just so thankful for the work that he did to question me about my lack of questions. So in my training, the question says, we learn the importance of extensive data gathering, good, to understand a person's situation. When a husband and wife come to me, he says she's disrespectful. She says he's controlling. my instinct is to get, quote, both sides of the story. Not a bad instinct. In fact, that's typically what we're taught to do. Proverbs 18:17, right? We want to hear a matter from both sides. We also want to be shrewd and we want to be wise, because Proverbs 18:18 says that casting lots keeps strong opponents apart. Proverbs 18, what is it, 5? We don't want to acquit the guilty. So we want to do good work by listening and learning. There are some best practices and some wisdom strategies that I think could help you here. And the question specifically asks, you know, does this data gathering change when coercive control might be involved? And I think it does. Now, let's try to just throw some pitches out here, because there's a lot of different things that we could cover. First, I understand that coercive control and domestic abuse in a biblical counseling framework will often be discovered or suspected in the context of marriage counseling. I do not promote or support the idea of doing marriage counseling for the problem of domestic abuse. I actually am a big fan of separating the parties in order to gather more relevant data, to do parallel tracks of care. I think it gives us the best chance of addressing the real problem. And then if the real problem is addressed, then we can promote and pursue marriage counseling if that's desired by both parties. But I am a big believer in separating them in order to gather that data and to address the real problem. Because the real problem is not marriage. When you throw marriage-focused solutions at an abuse problem, you have impotent results as far as addressing the real problem. It does not affect the change necessarily on the heart of the abusive person, and it often provides an opportunity for him to collude with the counselor and victim blame and add extra weight to the victim through mutualizing and so on. So we want to serve both parties the best that we can. I understand that if you're at a biblical counseling center that offers free counseling to your community, right, and you're a layperson and it's first come, first served, and you get a marriage counseling case, and in the process of that case, you recognize a power imbalance that is uncomfortable. You recognize that he may be coercive and controlling. The next step for you, hopefully, is the ability to refer up the ladder and get some advice. But I do understand that that happens. One thing I admire, a friend of mine who led a larger counseling center that had a lot of lay counselors like the one I just described, they had a referral system. They had some red flags that they would mark off. And if abuse was suspected, then marriage counseling ended. No questions asked. It was simply, I really feel like we've hit a snag. This is kind of above my pay grade. It's something that I think needs to be referred to the director of counseling. The director of counseling comes in and after review and says, you know, we're not doing marriage counseling anymore. We're doing individual counseling from here on out. And giving the couple an opportunity to agree to that, because they now understand that they are looking for abuse, coercion, and control. So I think when you suspect abuse, you go ahead and run that line. Like, you go ahead and check those traps to make sure and to do good work and diligent work. So with that said, does the data gathering change when coercive control is present? And the answer is yes. You want to gather relevant information so you can evaluate problems biblically. That's the next key element, right? So I want to have very specific discussions where I'm asking the parties questions. I prefer separate counselors if possible. I prefer a team-based approach. But for the sake of argument, let's say I'm working both sides of the coin. I don't recommend that, but we're going to do that for teaching purposes. I want to ask her about events, instances, and experiences. I want to draw out story and narrative. I want to put together a framework as best I can of coercive controlling behaviors that she's experienced. I may not come out and say, have you been abused? What's more likely to happen is my data gathering, because I have this suspicion and I want to do my due diligence, I may say something like, hey, talk to me a little bit about the worst conflict you and your husband ever had. And now I'm listening for tactics consistent with coercion and control. I'm taking notes on that, and I'm building my next questions after that. Tell me about, when was the first time a conflict like this happened? And if they're hesitant or they can't process what you're saying, draw back from the answers you just got. You know, a moment ago you said that, you know, he pinned you against the wall, and that was a very difficult thing. When was the first time he became physical in your relationship, whether it is physical touch like what you described, or maybe a time in which you felt threatened? Well, that happened, you know, 2 weeks after we were married. Tell me about that. Oh, wow. What was the most recent time that something like that happened? So now I've got 3 points of reference. The first time he was intimidating, coercive, controlling, the worst time, and then the most recent time. I'll probably ask questions then based upon the specifics. So if I have, let's say I have physical abuse, emotional abuse, financial control, using the kids, minimization, denial, and blame, sexual coercion, physical assault, like those are the things I'm building and learning. I'll then take that information, build a series of questions and discussion points that I'll have with him without revealing that I got the information from her. I'll probably start with the same base question. Tell me about the worst conflict you and your wife ever had. Sometimes they'll choose the same one. Sometimes it'll be different. The story will be different. The details will be somewhat different, but there'll be common elements. I'll use those common elements to build threads, and those are the threads that I'll pull on. So a moment ago, you know, you said that when this blew up, you know, you had said some things you regret. What were some of those things? Oh, so I see. So when was the, in this incident, you called her, you know, such and such name. When was the first time you used name calling to communicate your anger? Wow, what was the most significant instance of that? Like, if you could think back, the thing that maybe hurt the worst when you said it to her. Like, see what I'm doing? I'm now allowing him to disclose rather than both of, like, rather than me saying, well, your wife told me this. It's really not going to be helpful for him to tell him what I know. What's going to be more helpful is for him to self-reflect and to process that. And now I'm gathering really relevant data that allows me, again, to evaluate the problem biblically. Am I dealing with a high conflict marriage, or am I dealing with one partner who's coercively controlling and another who's resisting? And that's the key difference in our data gathering. We become more targeted, we counsel with an agenda, and then we highlight what we're learning, reflect back, call out observations and reflections from the counselees, apply more biblical principles, and so on. So it is a cycle of learning, growing, learning, growing, applying. And so we are in a consistent statement for a while of what you called extensive data gathering. We really want to gather relevant data so we can understand the problem biblically and then offer biblical instruction. Meet that biblically defined problem with a biblically applicable solution. And I think sometimes what happens, friends, is because we rush ahead, sometimes abuse work gets categorized as, well, you're not doing that. You're not looking for biblical problems. You're spending so much time trying to confirm abuse, and then you don't have a biblical problem, so you don't have a biblical solution. And I would disagree. I think if we quickly label this a marriage problem, or a pride problem, or an anger problem, and we don't take the time to pull the rope, get a clear picture of what's happening, I'm afraid we actually start rearranging fruit on the tree rather than digging up the root of the tree. So your training is exactly the way I would train you. I would call you to extensive data gathering. I would ask you to be creative in different cases and how you do that. understanding that abuse is one of those unique aspects in which it's difficult to get both sides of the story, in particular when they are together, and also when it's a case of abuse, as abusive people are prone to minimize, deny, and blame, and victims are prone to overfunction and take responsibility. So it's important, again, to slow down, practice patience, seek help when you need it, build a team when possible, and apply those key elements systematically, effectively, and possibly slowly in order to make sure that you're evaluating the correct problem and then offering a vital biblical solution. Well, friends, if information like this is helpful to you, I got news for you. We do this all the time in different venues. And one of those venues I want to invite you to consider joining is Peaceworks Live. Peaceworks Live 2025 will be our best event ever. It takes place September 11th through the 13th in Winfield, West Virginia. Powerful speakers, powerful worship, an opportunity to be part of a redemptive community. This is an event you do not want to miss. So here's my challenge. Go to chrismoles.org. That's chrismoles.org and register either live stream or in person. You really want to be here in person for Peaceworks Live 2025. Hey, friends, if you love the Peaceworks podcast, would you share the love? Rate, review, subscribe, follow, whatever the platform you're listening on asks you to do. It lets them know you value the podcast and it helps others find the podcast. Okay, friends, we're going to keep walking through questions in the coming weeks. I so appreciate your willingness to share space with us weekly. And we are so thankful to have this opportunity and this platform. So thank you again for being part of the Peaceworks podcast. Until next time, friends, God bless.